Hi, I'm 10. The 29th of April 1963 to the 28th of April 1964. Over.
10 out of 10 by Finlay MacArthur. Monday, the 29th of April 1963. It was my 10th birthday. I'd gotten up early to receive my presents from my mother. My dad had already left for work, so it was only my mum that could watch me excitedly open my gift. I developed a love of music from listening to old 78s on my parents' gramophone. Ella Fitzgerald, Perry Como and the Andrews Sisters, all on offer in their record collection. On my birthday, I received the studio album 32 minutes and 17 seconds with Cliff Richard. Not a classic, not a record that would define my future music choices, unless, of course, it helped my idea of No Music Day. It was definitely 32 minutes and 17 seconds of my life I wouldn't get back. My 10th year was mostly made up of adventures around the local hills and woodlands, going to watch Queen of the South, the mighty Dunhamers, playing football, and Kirby out on the street. There were a lot less cars in those days, so games were seldom stopped for passing Ford Anglias and Morris Minors. Dad had an Austin 1100, which was a thing of beauty. For a small car, you could fit at least half a dozen kids on the back seat, and with no seat belts, we'd slide from side to side on the red plastic seats on the sharp turns on the A roads to neighbouring towns. The hills around Newton Stewart were the awful hand, and maybe I played there too, often, as it definitely played a part in my poker-playing hands in later life. 10-year-olds back then weren't like 10-year-olds now. And I'd be out, away for miles day in, day out. The views of Galloway were unbelievable, up by Murray's Monument. Not that we cared. It was only somewhere to go and run around expelling excesses of energy. Murray's Monument was named after the local linguist Alexander Murray. I didn't know what a linguist was, but c'est la vie. A lot of people kept pigeons in their sheds out in the back gardens. But we had budgerigars in ours, which was set up as an aviary with a mesh cage outside so they could spread their wings. Budgies were a thing of beauty to me. Everyone different to the other. I had plenty of friends, but alone time in the aviary watching the birds was special. The walk to school wasn't far, so I managed to listen to side one of Cliff's record before leaving for primary school. A short cycle through cobbled streets on a rickety bike as 1963 Newton Stewart was like an olden days Hovis advert. Or at least that's how my memory of it has become. The swinging 60s was yet to reach Galloway, and the truth was, I'm not sure it ever did. My look was short trousers, school tie, and a tank top. Even in the coldest winters, shorts were a must wear to school. I rated myself highly at Kirby, a game where two players on either side of the street threw a ball trying to hit the curb and have the ball returned to them. I was in reality no better or worse than any other Kirbyist in my street. This didn't stop me from dreaming of representing my country at Kirby World Championships. Olympic glory was just one curb away. I waited on the British Kirby Association, in brackets, BKA, close brackets, discovering me. But also, no such organisation existed, as this was just a game and not a recognised sport. It was just something kids did between school finishing and darkness, when mothers would shout their kids in. Not to be disheartened, I started my own association, the Kirby League Federation. I still to this day shout, "Kirby," and do a throwing action if things go well. If they go really well, I shout, "Queen of the South!" When I was 10, JFK died. I was devastated. He died in his prime. What a budgie he was. Ich bin ein Budgieregar. Not longer after, the President of the United States of America, with the same initials, was assassinated, which seemed a terrible coincidence. As Macmillan was looking a bit peaky, I decided I should no longer own parakeets that had the name of a world leader. Khrushchev was still looking chirpy, at least. Before I had the confidence for breeding my own birds, I'd get them from a large bird shop in Dumfries called Budget Regars, where they certainly went cheap. The day after JFK died, the president, not the bird, one of the biggest moments in my life happened. Doctor Who started on the television. Beforehand, I'd much preferred travelling to the local picture house to watch films on a Saturday morning. The pictures would play old reruns of Zorro, The Lone Ranger and Flash Gordon, as well as new films like The Great Escape for the boys and Cleopatra for the girls and The Birds for me. But the very first Doctor Who changed that forever. The space race was in full flow, and satellites and astronauts were being fired into space 10 a penny, which was quite a lot of money pre-decimalisation. We were also moving house, leaving Scotland to move to Corby in the middle of England, where they strangely had the same accent as mine. We would move to Corby not long after my next birthday. Corby now looks like 70s throwback. But in early 1964, this looked like the future. Big futuristic square buildings gave the town centre a place of dreams. With that and my Doctor Who obsession now in full flow, I couldn't wait to move there. This year, I'd watched Henry Cooper put Cassius Clay on his arse and saw Martin Luther King saying he'd had a dream. Now, I had a dream. It was to be a Time Lord. Dreams would come true. All I needed was glam rock to invent itself to produce the soundtrack.
Under My Dark Forest Days by Hazel Palmer. I awoke on the morning of my 10th birthday to somewhat of a surprise. Feeling a chill on my toes, I drew them back under the covers, only to feel a cool draught on my neck. It was cold enough to wake me, and as I opened my eyes, I saw not the usual bedroom lampshade, garish curtains, discarded socks, but a canopy of trees, branches, ferns, leaves. There I was, in my usual bed, but the curtains, the room, the house were all gone. Me and my bed were in the middle of a forest clearing, with sunlight just beginning to trickle through the branches. I smelt the mixture of fresh leaves, damp moss, and rotting woodland debris, the faint whiff of foxshite puncturing the sweet green smells. I felt the cool breeze meander through my thin cotton pyjamas. I worried briefly that I wasn't wearing any pants. I imagine that pants are quite essential when surviving in the wild. Regardless, The situation needs investigation. I was freshly 10 years old. That is a ripe age for adventure and shenanigans. I paused to fret a little about where my birthday presents were, and come to think of it, my mum, my family. No matter, the day was ahead of me. Time to make a plan. 1. Get up. 2. Adopt jungle mentality. 3. Practice growling. 4. Be humble. Nature is power. 5. Be stealthy. Stealth always wins. 6. Be alert. Britain needs lerts. Ha ha, I crack myself up sometimes. 7. Explore my surroundings. 8. Find food and shelter. 9. Find a way home. 10. Don't forget to make the bed. Luckily, I kept a notebook and pencil under my pillow, so I was able to write down this list. Maybe I'll keep it in a box of memories and uncover it years later when I'm an adult and all imagination has left my aging brain. It'll spark a faint memory of that time I survived alone in the forest for a whole year. My grandchild will find me sleeping by the fire with a small, roughly written note half fallen from my old gnarled hand and the whiff of a smile on my saggy, rutted, aged face. They'll smile, kiss my hand, and run off to play with their skipping rope or such like, and I'll breathe my last breath, dropping the note to the floor, happily bathing in the memories of my long-forgotten youth. What I won't remember is the fact that I wasn't wearing underwear. But at this precise moment, upon clambering out of my bed onto a dew-dampened forest floor, it felt extremely relevant, as did the fact that I needed a shite. Where to shite in the woods? Unfortunately for me, I chose to relieve myself in the ready-made toilet hole that I found conveniently behind a tree. What had seemed like a fortuitous find really upset the rabbit family that were living there in their self-built burrow. They were a feral, violent family of bunnies. I'd always thought rabbits were cute little creatures, but these were nasty beasts. Not at all understanding of a young boy needing the toilet, my fun forest adventure was beginning to look less appealing. Dark thoughts began to appear in my head. The rabbits teased me and then pinned me down and tickled me with their fur until I wanted to scream, but I couldn't. Or I couldn't be heard. I don't recall. All I remember is that hate that welled up inside me. They had to suffer. I wanted to burn their burrow. I wanted to blast them with water until their fur stuck to them. I wanted to use the babies to wipe my shitey bottom. This was just the start of my dark forest days. My mind became full of nothing but hate and destruction. I didn't want to get out of the woods. I didn't want to go home. I just wanted to destroy all that was beautiful. My mind span with creative, destructive thoughts. Being there alone in the forest seemed like a freedom to do whatever I liked, and none of it was good. The dark undercurrent of my soul had been exposed. I barely remember what happened over the next few months or how I survived. I know the rabbits didn't. I know I developed a taste for raw meat. I know I didn't care which animal's home I used as a toilet. I never saw another person, and I didn't care. All I cared about was destruction, killing all that I once found beautiful and fascinating. I crashed through nature with a feverish energy, reveling in all I could ruin with my fists and my teeth and my scornful comments. I felt the destructive creative power known only to humans, and it felt good. One day, I came across a new area in the never-ending forest, a clearing. Perhaps the clearing I started in. Perhaps not. There was no bed to be seen. I no longer needed home comforts. In the centre of the clearing was a huge man-made tower, taller almost than the surrounding trees. It was made of dark grey stone, straight and strong, massive and imposing. It was like my dark subconscious made real. I imagined living at the top of it, with fire burning all around, and all the cute little creatures and flowers and birds and nature burning below me in the hell that I had created. I approached the building to find a small door at the base. Excellent! My plan may yet become a reality. Pinned to the door was something vaguely familiar. It was the list that I'd written when I first appeared in the woods. It was smeared with mud and difficult to read, but it was just enough to take me back to that first morning in the woods and the plans I once had. Above it was another note with "Happy 11th birthday" written on it. I'd been out here a whole year. I pushed the small door open and was hit by the smell of my old bedroom. The funny wood of the chest of drawers, the musty, dusty books, the smelly socks on the radiator. Where are my presents?
A Troubled Dream. Blackbird Stew by Taris Young. I am in a warm kitchen on a bright autumn day, sitting at a creaking wooden table. Across the room, on the hob of an ancient-looking Rayburn, I see a pot of bubbling stew. Leaning over the pot, a silhouetted figure stirs the stew, singing a gentle melody as she does so. I assume the figure is my mother, despite the figure being shrouded in darkness. As she brings the pot to the table, I realise with horror that it is full to the brim with the fresh corpses of blackbirds, unplucked, their lifeless eyes staring back at me as their heads bob in the still simmering pot. The stew smells overpowering. The stench of overcooked garden birds mixes with a blend of putrid herbs and spices. Yet, I find myself drawn towards the brew, unable to look away as the figure, still hazy in my peripheral vision, gingerly removes the individual blackbirds from the pot and places them on a large silver serving platter. I feel a sense of panic and shame wash over me as I realise it's not my mother at all, but some unknown figure with soulless bird-like eyes. I wake just as a large wooden spoon, dripping with the black broth, is shoved towards me.